continue. It almost permits terrible acts to be committed against people who are even marginally connected to terrorism. And you see that word being thrown around, being used to describe people who just want Palestinians to have human rights. So my journey to get to that point of thinking was a pretty long one. I had to tear down, first of all, my definition of terrorism. I had to tear down the propaganda that I had been fed, that terrorists just kind of hate us because of who we are. I had to learn a lot. I had to supplement my understanding of the U.S.'s place in the global world order.
We have 10 seconds, Joy.
With history, based on, you know, the oppression of the U.S. military and regions. So that's really how I got to where I am now.
I want to thank you both for being with us. I want to thank Lieutenant Joy Metzler, active duty Air Force Lieutenant seeking conscientious objector status, and Levi Pierpont, who is a conscientious objector, a friend of Aaron Bushnell. They met at Air Force basic training in Texas. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warren of Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astu Joe. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
International Women's Day is Saturday, March 8th. Here at KBOO, we have more than 24 hours of radio specials planned, and we're starting early on Friday at 9 p.m. Tune in for a whole day of music, culture, and conversations by women and about women. More details about the specials are online at kboo.fm/IWD. That's KBOO's radio celebration of International Women's Day, all day Saturday, March 8th on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations of programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the first Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It's just after 8 a.m. on a Tuesday morning. It's time for Too Much Information with your two hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Do stay tuned.
Good morning, and welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. Joining me, as she does every week, Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
Well, Tracy, here we are in what is this, week six, year six of the Trump presidency? Has he always been president? Will he always be president? What's happening?
There are people putting up legislation to make sure that he can have a third term. What's happening is the best question. It is an existential question, I believe, for our country and those residing within. And we started in the midst of the pandemic with the name Too Much Information. And right now we are being fire hosed. So it's not just the name of our show. It really is. There's so much going on all at once. We're trying to pack it into this today's show, get y'all engaged in, like, what is coming up for you? What is significant about this moment? You know, 6 weeks in, and boy, oh boy, things are tanking real fast. So we'll have the opportunity to unpack some of that, some of, you know, what's coming up for me, some of what's coming up for Abe, and open up the space for, you know, folks to share and chime in. But yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yes, a lot going on indeed. And it does indeed feel like this has been an interminable period of time since this man took the office, took the oath of office again in late January, which just seems so close and yet eons and eons away. And the future seems to stretch out interminably, mostly because with each and every day, there's more example of chaos, of the deliberate hollowing out of the federal government, the endangerment of thousands of people's lives and livelihood, and on and on and on. I guess we'll start this week, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of U.S. foreign policy today. We're going to save that for another time. But I'm sure many of you saw the debacle that was the meeting in the White House on Friday between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, President Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, and little Marco Rubio, who did his best attempt to sink into the cushions of the couch upon which he sat. Tracy, I think I can count on one hand the moments that I have felt so acutely ashamed, ashamed of what was happening in my country. That was an absolute debacle, and a new low point even for this administration.
Yeah, I mean, it was radioing what we've been saying, what, you know, Kamala Harris has said, what we know Hillary Clinton was saying many years ago about Trump's allegiance to Putin. He was showing out for his master. He was performing strongman politics with another respected world leader whose country has been invaded by what we see as a political and international enemy of the people. But that's Trump's bestie. That's Trump's master. And so we saw that play out. What was interesting in the way that J.D. Vance was posturing is that he's been playing second fiddle to Elon Musk. And so it was his opportunity under the spotlight to show up in that same vein that Trump did, but to have his own time in the spotlight because, you know, he's been in the shadows behind Elon Musk as the real president, you know, Trump as the vice president, and he as, you know, the fool back there in the background. And so this was his opportunity to also perform for Putin and show his allegiance. I mean, that's what it looked like to me. I think that's what it's appeared to be for many other people. I had, of course, secondhand embarrassment. I don't take up the shame of other people and their behavior, but it was absolutely some secondhand embarrassment as a person who lives in this country, but also doesn't see myself as being represented by the people that are currently running the country.
You know, I think that's a better way to look at it and a better way to describe it than I did. So, yeah, I'm with you. I felt that acute secondhand embarrassment during that debacle. And I think your analysis is spot on. That that performance, which is what it was for exactly two audiences. One, Trump's diehard base here in the United States. And secondly, and more importantly, Vladimir Putin. I think that we can say, without hesitation, without reservation, that the president of the United States is a Russian asset. Now, I'm old enough to remember when opposition to the Republican Party was, or opposition to the, to Russia, was a bedrock principle of the Republican Party. But those are not the times we live in anymore. And every day that goes by in this administration, it becomes much more clear that these are not the times that we are accustomed to living in anymore. So I think we're going to leave that that gross wreckage of a press conference / vaudeville performance, whatever that was. We're going to leave that behind. Except to note one more thing. The press corps that was in the room, such as it is, because we know it's becoming harder and harder for actual journalists to gain access to Trump press events, the press was on hand to ask questions of Zelensky and Trump, and notably, Marjorie Taylor Greene's boyfriend, now a White House press corps member, asked President Zelensky why he wasn't wearing a suit, and followed up asking if he even owned a suit. So that is where we are, listeners, in today's United States of America. Okay. Well, Tracy, what else is going on?
That's just a scrape of the surface, right? Like, I mean, a scrape of the surface. We were radioed yesterday to be alerted that Pam Bondi, in her role as the Attorney General, is planning to charge Andrea Ocasio-Cortez for her support of immigrants' legal protections. Of course, you know, in New York, there's been a longstanding sanctuary law that protects the rights of citizens, undocumented and otherwise, to be able to move, and does not allow for public officials within New York to participate in the activities of ICE and other agencies that are enforcing immigration law. And so AOC has been pretty vocal in her support of her community, and now in a posture, of course, once again, bullying, very much aligned with the Trump administration. Pam Bondi, in her new role as Attorney General, is planning to charge AOC for her support of those immigrant legal protections. Interesting, right? Let's see how this plays out. Let's see if it actually happens. But it once again, it is a bullying tactic to choose someone who's prominent and young in the Democratic Party, who has a lot of support at just not even the local level, but at the national level, as a person who often speaks out, you know, in effort to advance justice and democracy, being targeted, right? So we're going to see some more of that, I'm sure. Also, I'm reacting to Tommy Tuberville's trans misogynistic rant about the extinction of women's sports based on the participation of trans women and girl athletes, that somehow this will lead to the extinction. Somehow we're going to have just this, you know, mounting number of trans athletes that want to participate in girls and women's sports that is going to decimate sports altogether. I mean, it's ridiculous. This boogeyman, the scapegoating, using trans people as a political chip to instill fear in people, to fake want to protect women, when there are at least 10 predators in the cabinet, right? Like, are we being for real? Are we being serious right now? There is an opening by the Office of Civil Rights related to this in the state of Washington against Tumwater School District for allowing, after the executive order that said protection of women's sports by Donald Trump, they are continuing to support their trans athletes. And so now there's an Office of Civil Rights investigation against Tumwater School District. Will watch that space. Tumwater is not that far to the north of Portland, in Washington, and it's not lost on me that it's been very quiet in the PIL, that's the Portland Interscholastic League, been very quiet in the NWAC, that's the Northwest Athletic Conference that we are part of, as the community colleges in Oregon. We haven't really heard much from anyone about this executive order and how it's being either enforced or not. And I encourage folks to watch that space, right? Once again, using trans people as a boogeyman for which to gain political obedience and use authoritarian measure as a trick to enforce these rules around gender and gender identity and gender expression. we're just in the craziest timeline.
The craziest, and as we observed a number of times on this program, the dumbest possible timeline. We asked the question at the outset of the show, what's going on? We're running down a brief list of what's happening. Of course, we have not the time nor the bandwidth to get into everything that is transpiring in a flood of information each and every day. Some of the things we've decided to highlight today include the fact that the Atlanta branch of the Federal Reserve has lowered its projection for economic output over the first quarter of 2025. It started out predicting growth of around 2.3%. Last week, that was revised down to a 1.5% contraction. So from 2.3% positive growth to negative growth of 1.5%. And then yesterday, it was again down revised to a 2.8% contraction. So the sledgehammer and or the chainsaw, perhaps more aptly, that Elon Musk is taking to the federal government is already making itself felt in the macro measurements of the economy. Now, we can spend a lot of time debating the value of evaluating the economy in these terms, and indeed the value of a capitalist economy in general. But suffice it to say, economic performance and output is generally much more positive when governments behave in a predictable manner. This government, this administration, has been the polar opposite of predictable. And we are already, not even to the end of the first quarter of 2025, seeing the negative ramifications of these decisions. We are coming off the rails, Tracy, at an alarming rate economically. And now we have been warned by Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland and the director of the Social Security Administration under President Biden, that he expects the Social Security Administration to fail to meet its payments within 60 to 90 days and has advised people to start saving now. In the 8 decades that Social Security has existed, it has never failed to make a payment on time. And now, just a few weeks into the new Trump administration, the former director is advising people around the country to start tightening their belts in anticipation of history's first missed Social Security payment.
Now, I have to name, right? So we've already said it a million times, but cruelty is the point here. To tell people who are living Social Security check to Social... That's a hard thing to say. Social Security check to the next check, right? To save money in anticipation for not getting what we've known as the social safety net for many years in this country is a jest of the most imminent cruelty. Those people don't have money to save because they're not barely getting any money. And if you're getting, say, disability check through Social Security, it's even less, right? These folks are at the margin currently of poverty based on, you know, kind of what they're already getting. To imagine not getting anything is, I continue to say, people will die. People will lose their houses. People will be unhoused, unsheltered, on the streets. Right, and we've already made houseless people a boogeyman through our just lack of you know, care and compassion and understanding, and this is just going to add to that. What is so crazy for me right now is that people are not running around hair on fire. There's a little sense of apathy that I am just not able to even tap into, and is it because people are just overwhelmed, flooded with cortisol. But when Meemaw and Peepaw don't get that Social Security check, and I'm really speaking to the folks who supported this, the folks who continue to support this, I wonder, will it be this level of apathy?
You know, that's a really good question. That's something I've wondered about as well. Why aren't more heads on fire? Why do we not see flaming heads everywhere we go? Yes, there seems to be a curious apathy that has the nation in its grip. I think a lot of that is a downstream effect of the shock that a lot of people have felt that this dude is once again holding the highest office in the land, which has been compounded day on day, by the absolute unhinged, off the rails behavior of Elon Musk, which many flippantly but also seriously have suggested is the one wielding the real power in this administration. We have never seen this sort of deliberate, focused, systematic destruction of the apparatus that props up the federal government and, by extension, props up the larger macroeconomic system of the United States. We've never seen anything like this before. So I think what we're seeing looks a lot like apathy from the outside, but I think if you dig a little deeper, is something more akin to shock, to people reeling in disbelief, to people who haven't yet been able to gather their wits and put their feet back on the ground. Fortunately, I think we're seeing the beginnings of that, and I'm knocking wood here, all the wood I can find. We're actually seeing the beginnings of the Democratic Party acting like an opposition party. I say that reservedly, and reserve the right to revoke that statement based upon typical Democratic spinelessness. But let's hope. The evidence, Republicans have been holding town hall meetings in their home districts all around the country, and almost without fail, they are being shouted down, they are being booed, they are being grilled relentlessly by angry constituents. They are being forced to ask or answer difficult questions. Our very own Cliff Bentz in Oregon's 2nd District, which encompasses most of the eastern half of the state, a week before last held 4 different town hall events and was shouted down at each and every one of those events. People are angry. People are uncertain about the future. People are afraid, and they want more answers than this administration and that their representatives in Congress are able to give them. This could be the seed of something, Tracy. But right now, this the apathy, the shock that we've been talking about, seems to be the prevalent emotion. But at least there's signs of life.
Yeah, I think too. With these folks, right? There's a choice to keep doing the town halls, or what we've known them to do in the past is just to stop hosting town halls.
Yes.
To try and sanitize their own impressions and their own experience from the people who are, attempting to shut them down. So we'll see if these town halls continue, and if the people who are supposed to be representing the actual people shouting at them make any attempt to push back on what's happening on behalf of their constituents, the people who voted for them to be in office, right? We'll see.
We shall see. 503-231-8187 is the number to call today. Tracy, I want to double back on something that you mentioned when you began your remarks this morning, and that is Attorney General Pam Bondi's threat, and that's what it was, against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, we should note, is doing nothing more but advising the people in her district of their constitutional rights. Apparently now that rises to the level of official sanction and official punishment from the executive branch, merely for advising people what they are and are not able to do in terms of exercising their constitutional rights in the face of prospective deportation. Now, it is worth observing here that even undocumented folks, even non-citizens, residents or visitors to this country are entitled to the protections afforded by the Constitution. If you are from a foreign country and you come to the United States and you commit a crime, you are entitled to a swift trial. You are entitled to representation by an attorney and a trial comprised of a jury of your peers. All of these things, all of these rights are afforded to people even who are not citizens. Visitors to this country also enjoy freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and on and on and on. So all that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is doing is offering a bit of a civics lesson to the people in her district and letting them know what they can and cannot do and what they must and must not accept from people who might be trying to deport them or people that they love. This warrants a threat from the highest levels of the U.S. Justice Department. This is the world in which we are living. I want that to sink in to people. Even being apprised of your constitutional rights is worthy of punishment. 503, yeah, go ahead.
People keep saying, are we going full Nazi? Yes, it seems as such. Yes, we are. Got more about that.
503-231-8187. Let's go to Santiago. Good morning. Are you with us? All right, we will come back to Santiago if we are able.
Yeah.
Last week on this program, we featured a couple of guests who are organizing a resistance to the regime at a very grassroots level. But I'm feeling, Tracy, like that can't be the only way we fight back. There has to be a systemic resistance pushing back at all levels of government all around the country. There is no aspect of American civic life that we can afford to be complacent about. We have to put up a fight. It's time to shake off whatever this shock, whatever this lethargy, whatever this apathy is. It is the time.
Yeah. So this morning on True Social, Donald Trump posted a message, and he said all federal funding will stop for any college or university that allows illegal protests. Mind you, illegal. This is America. Protests are not illegal. Protests are the right of the people under the First Amendment. He also says agitators will be imprisoned or permanently sent back to the country from which they came. American students will permanently be expelled or, depending on the crime, arrested. No masks. Thank you for your attention to this matter. So once again, right, we continue to see this slippery slope of impeding free speech. That is part of, you know, the end of the Fourth Estate, expelling the Associated Press from White House press conferences, elevating right-wing media, part of the disinformation, misinformation atmosphere, to be in those spaces reporting back what he's saying. If Americans can't stand up for the First Amendment, I don't know what else we're going to stand for, right? Like, I know people get really riled up about the Second Amendment, which also Donald Trump has said will take their guns. When the narrative for so many years about the Democratic Party and progressives in general has been they want to take your guns. He said that just a few days ago with Pam Bondi, recorded on TV. So I just continue to ask, what is going to be the tipping point here where enough Americans are outraged over what is happening? It's shocking to me that so many people are being passive in this moment, waiting potentially for someone else to stand in the gap and act. And I will continue to say it as long as I have breath. No one is coming to save us. We will have to save ourselves. What will that look like?
I suspect that they are being roused. I suspect that we are going to see evidence of that before long. 503-231-8187. Linda, good morning.
Good morning. My hair is on fire, and it's 73-year-old hair. I live down in Salem, and in order to combat this world that I'm living in right now, a bunch of us are going down to the Saturday market it's opened up for spring, and we're trying to register people to vote and people that are new to the state, just getting them set up, you know, to be involved. I'm on the streets at the Capitol every week for the Poor People's Campaign, Indivisible, and then going to my two senators' town halls. They've been around quite a bit when they're not in Washington, D.C., and that's how I'm combating it. But I, just like Mark Knopfler's last album, this is not going to end well. I'm trying to have hope, but, you know, this between AI race, I don't feel real confident right now about the future. And that's all I had to say. But yes, my hair is on fire. And thank you, Abe and Tracy, for all you do. You keep my sanity like you can't believe.
Well, thank you, Linda, for calling in and for supporting this program. I'm both happy and sad that your hair is on fire because, you know, nobody wants their hair to be on fire.
That's really long hair, too.
That you're paying attention.
I always have paid attention. I've been involved at local level for a long, long time, and I work on elections and, you know, trying to get my neighbors to get out and vote because those votes matter. 66% turnout last election. Yeah. And I know that if we had 100, we might have Kamala. And she would have taken out the orange stains. So, anyway. Yeah. So, you guys
thank you very much for the call.
And thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Yeah. And are we expecting the 73-year-olds to stand up and fight for us? I mean, I think it's time that we stand up as younger people for the people, you know, who came before us, the people on which, you know, we're standing on their shoulders. Like, those people need to have rest. Where are the millennials, the Gen Xers, the people kind of in the middle who have oftentimes economic power and political power who are just cowering to this political administration of this time? It feels crazy to me.
That's a very good question. And I think it requires a level of sociological knowledge and analysis that I don't have. But I suspect, or to paint with a very broad brush here, the extent to which younger generations, younger millennials, Gen Z, the extent to which so much of their social interaction takes place in the digital space, I think we're seeing now reflected in real life situations. Well, why haven't we seen people out and about by the thousands, which we're starting to see? Credit where it's due. People are starting to turn out. Why are we not seeing many, many more young people whom one would expect in times of political unrest and uncertain futures to show up? I suspect there's a lot taking place in digital spaces that we don't see every day in our lives. But if you're a younger person, you happen to be listening to this broadcast, to this program today, it's time. You know, it's time. Go on, carry out your discourse online. Absolutely. Do your persuading online. Move the needle as you're able to online. Yes, do those things. But turn out. Turn out in the streets. That is the one thing that makes governments truly uneasy, is people in the streets by the thousands saying, this is not the way. That's what we need to see, and we're starting to see it, and I'm grateful for that. We need more of it going forward, and we're going to be watching this situation very carefully on this program and looking to identify opportunities for you, our listeners, to get out there in the streets.
Uh-huh.
Looks like we have Santiago back. Let's go to the phones. Good morning.
Good morning. I think the biggest reason why we don't see more young people out in the streets is because we have too many politicians who are telling them they need to trust the process. Because the fact of the matter is that right now there is no process. And if we keep relying on the fact that there is some sort of we keep telling them they need to rely on it, then they're ultimately going to sit around and wait for the meteor to show up, I guess. So I mean, the thing is that our salvation is not going to come from above. You know, while we do have a handful of people who are progressives who are standing up to the Trump administration, we need as the people. I mean, we need to start getting angry. We need to start getting a little, you know, we need to start, you know, delving a little bit into our own personal madness, if that's you know, we can talk about that, because you know, Thomas Sankara, the communist leader, the short-lived communist leader of Grenada, talked about the idea that, you know, there needs to be a certain level of madness inherent in every individual who seeks social change, because ultimately we're swimming against the stream. You know, the power where it lies is trying to push us in a direction and to allow us to just kind of like allow ourselves to let go and to be moved by the current of power. But the revolutionary, the direct action person is swimming against that, and there needs to be a certain level of madness, and that requires letting go of the idea that there is a process. And I'm not just talking about communist leaders, I'm talking about Malcolm X. you know, someone who said that, you know, it, you know, because we just celebrated Black History Month, and people forget that he said, you know, if you want to don't, you know, if you can't take the word liberation out of your mouth, if you're scared of death, because right now that's where we are. You know, so I tell everybody, we need to disinvest from the political parties that focus on keeping order and focus on the ones that are here to serve the people, come what may. So you're talking about your socialist organizations, Democratic Socialists of America, Party for Socialism and Liberation, African People's Socialist Party, La Raza Unida. A lot of these organizations are also talking about labor unions. While they still work within structures of power, they are along with non-voter political parties are ways of creating dual power, along with mutual aid. You know, we just don't have, we have been so suppressed by anti-communism that we don't, that young people don't see the viable options in front of us right now. And so, so if you're talking about something to do and a reason to get in the streets, start getting with these organizations that are here as indirect defiance of, of capitalism, of American exceptionalism, American imperialism, and really start putting your efforts into that, because the more that we create dual power, the more we can actually put pressure on power centers. Because along with seeing people in the streets saying that that's not enough, the biggest fear is that it culminates in something that ultimately truly challenges power. Like we've seen with the Rainbow Coalition back in the day, the actual ones, not the ones that were working with now, but the ones that were led by actual, like, you know, communists and revolutionaries who wanted to see something happen. But yeah, so if we want to see people in the streets, we need to stop encouraging following the process and start encouraging people to follow their hearts and their consciousness.
Hear, hear. Listen, thank you for the call. I really needed to hear that this morning. 503-231-8187. Do you have any comments on Santiago's call, Tracy, before we move to the next?
No, I mean, I hear him, and I feel like that the level of complacency has been because we're seeing leaders be very complacent. The same leaders that will say Trump is dangerous will, with the other hand, shake his hand and say, well, I want to work with you, right? No, like, these two things can't be true. You can't want to work with a dangerous person who is going to dismantle democracy and tell me that they're dangerous. Like, how does that sync up for you? And so I absolutely agree with Santiago and building political power outside of the current system, building political power that challenges the current system. I don't think there's a way that the Republican Party survives this time that we're in, and I don't know what the Democratic Party could do to survive either. So we're at this interesting moment in time. It's Venus in retrograde. Mercury in retrograde is coming. We have this interesting planetary alignment. I feel like this is our moment, right, to mount a resistance that looks like a political movement that is multiracial, multi-socioeconomic class, focusing on solidarity for people who have never been counted in a system that was designed for only certain people to succeed. And once again, like, I feel like Santiago is channeling something, a message for all of us of, like, how do we activate ourselves and activate the folks who are closest to us in proximity to do something in this moment? Because the longer we sit in complacency, the more our rights get taken. I remind you,
yes.
Hitler,
yes,
dismantled German democracy in 53 days, right? We are 6 weeks in. The time is ticking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We should not miss the opportunity this year. The opportunity to create solidarity amongst groups that have been separated by rhetoric, by propaganda, by tradition over generations. The opportunity is now here. to draw all these sorts of people together in solidarity with one another, to push back against this anti-democratic, anti-human administration. This administration that wants to create a dystopian, post-apocalyptic landscape in which the many live in poverty and are ruled by the very, very few wealthy at the top. This is the world that they want to create. This is why Trump has essentially taking steps to create a multipolar world in which the United States, China, and Russia are aligned against the European Union as essentially the last remaining bastion of modern democracy. And if you're familiar at all with the European Union, that's not a very inspiring last bastion of modern democracy. But this is the world that we're creating, in which regions, the world is divided into regions, into spheres of influence, governed by kleptocracies, by plutocracies, who exert their will over their populaces and keep them in line by privation and by propaganda. This is the world that is being forged before our eyes. And you're absolutely right, Tracy. If we sit back and are complacent at this moment in time, we will regret it for generations to come. Is this hyperbole? I really don't think it is. We have never lived through a period like this in the United States. We can point to historical analogs in other countries, and what follows periods like this, it's not good.
It's definitely not good. I'm getting a message from one of my Twitter followers, Harrison, that Politico is reporting that the National Republican Congressional Committee is telling its congressional House Republicans to have no more town halls. What I said and predicted is being directed by the National Republican Congressional Committee. So no more town halls, no more footage of people getting screamed at by their constituents. They will go dark to their constituents, the people who voted them in office, and they serve. Right? Once again, watch the space. You might have to show up at something else that they're present at. You might have to show up at their dinner. I'm not sure how this is all going to play out, but we've got to get active, people.
Outside their homes, for example. At their district offices, for example. These are the kinds of things that we need to begin doing. And can we talk about the Democrats for a second? We've expressed many, many times on this program, albeit not in this particular context, our frustration with the Democratic Party. On the one hand, our frustration with their lack of being an effective instrument and vehicle for progressives, and now at their utter ineffectuality at being an opposition party. Now, it is true that the Republicans now control the White House, both houses of Congress, and the Supreme Court is quite comfortably in the back pocket of Donald Trump. All of these things are true. There are very few major levers that the Democrats can grab and pull to bring this out of control train to a stop. But there are things that they can do, which they are singularly failing to do at this moment in time. We see people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez out there doing the right thing. She's on the streets talking to her constituents. She is advising people of their constitutional rights. She's telling them how to avoid deportation by ICE. She is telling them to stand up and be engaged citizens. This is something we need to see around the country. But instead, what is showing up in my social media feed and popping up on my phone and my text messages? Democrats saying, hey, things are crazy. Trump and Musk are out of control. Now's the time when you need to give us some money. No. No, that is the most tone-deaf possible response to the current moment. You're saying you need our money. Well, we need to see you fight. We need to see you fight, if only in a symbolic way. We need to see you fighting for the world's most precious commodity, which is attention. That is the world's most precious substance in the modern moment. It is attention. And there are precious few Democrats who know how to get and keep attention. And those are the people who should be driving the Democratic train right now, not your Chuck Schumers, not your Nancy Pelosi's. It is time to hand over leadership of the Democratic Party to the younger generation, who at least has a modicum of understanding about how to get and keep attention in the modern media environment. For example, tonight, Trump is addressing a joint session of Congress. If the Democrats were smart, absolutely none of them would show up. And Trump would give his address to a mostly empty chamber. That would be a good move. That would grab people's attention. And why not counter-program while they're at it? Instead of having the country tune in to watch the president bloviate, have a simultaneous event hosted on YouTube or on Twitch or someplace where an alternate agenda can be put forward, something that moves beyond just give us some money so that we can return to the status quo. Come on, Democrats. The moment is here. I'm a little irritated with the Democrats, Tracy.
Yeah, I think we were all a little fed up. I will say that Tuesday there's going to be a State of Our Union. It's going to be Dr. Reverend Barber, and it's going to be simulcast on YouTube, looking for about 100,000 people to be watching. It's going to be hosted by Roland S. Martin, and there will be programming that is counter to what Donald Trump will be saying in the State of the Union. So there's something coming. I want to hear from Robin on the line. Robin, good morning.
Well, good morning. How are you?
Good.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. Okay, first of all, I got to say, today at City Hall, noon to 4, there's an anti-King Donald rally. Now, last week, I was in a parking lot with my Stop Trump button on, and somebody told me they loved my button. She said she was thinking of standing at an intersection near her with her own sign, and she said, I just think about that all the time. And I said, well, I'll do that with you. That very day, we went up with our signs. We did it Wednesday. We did it Friday at an intersection near us. Her sign was very nice. It said, we the people equal democracy. I had two signs. One said, orange lives matter. And the other one said, how's your mama? Save Social Security. We did that on our own.
That's brilliant.
We can do it.
Well, listen, thank you. Thank you for the phone call. Okay. Thank you for that, sharing that with us. It is these little things, Tracy, these little flashes of resistance that help to kindle hope. And that really sounds wishy-washy and silly coming out of my mouth, even as I hear myself say it. But it is true. It is true. We need these things to happen, and we need to hear about them. And when we hear about them, they start happening more and more frequently.
Well, I have more bad news. Bert is also sending me a message that the Supreme Court just weakened the Clean Water Act's limitations on raw sewage discharge into our water in a 5-4 ruling. So weakening the EPA's level of oversight for water treatment plants to pollute our water and allow for raw sewage to come in contact with clean water sources, water that our fish and wildlife, rely upon, water that we need, and it's part of our larger ecosystem, will be polluted by this weakening of EPA rules.
All right, paving the way for more crap from the Trump administration. Got it. Love it. Love to hear it. 503-231-8187. Let's go to Dan. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, thanks for what you're doing here today. And also really appreciate Santiago's call. Wanted to let folks know that Saturday there is a women's rally down at the Japanese Veterans Memorial from 10:30 to 12:30. And it's International Women's Day. I have one thing that I've been espousing or pushing is the SPA treatment. And what does that stand for? S. Solidarity. We have to build solidarity worldwide among groups from all the divides that have been created, if you will. Two, P, preparation. We need to prepare. We are not just politically, economically, but ecologically. So we all need to be prepared. Get ready for the Cascadian earthquake, and you'll be ready for a lot of the other things that are potentially in our future. And finally, A, action. We have to do action. And, you know, as somebody who was part of BLM movement, which I think was important, one of the things, though, we were out in the street night after night, and that what lasted over a year, but it fizzled out, and a lot of the networks that could have been created were not created. So getting in the street is super important, but at the same time, we need to be there face-to-face, getting to know people and building that solidarity so that when we do actions, they can be really specific. I don't believe we should have our hair on fire. You know, before Trump came into office, we were in the middle of a genocide, and we still are. So it's not like going backwards is going to get us to where we need to be. We need to move forward, and that means the left needs to come together with what it actually wants to deliver, the meaningful things that the left has to offer. As I see it, this country does not have a left of any significant power within the power structure of this country, both at a state and at a national level. Anyway, I'll let you get to the other caller, and I really appreciate you taking my call.
Hey, thank you, Dan. I really appreciate your comments. Your thoughts, Tracy?
I mean, so I hear what Dan is saying, right? Like, the material conditions have not changed so dramatically. But to me, this moment in time, not only for that genocide that has been happening, what we know about that, more bad news, is that in, you know, accordance and in collaboration with the new American Trump administration, have cut off any aid further going to the Gaza, right? This person is talking about changing that into a landscape of condos and high rises and permanently removing, right, through starvation and death and destruction, the people who have lived there for time immemorial. So it is different. It is different. And hair on fire, whether or not people think that that's the appropriate response right now, what to me is not the appropriate response is this level of apathy and inaction that I continue to tune into. There has been conversations about whether it's okay to have conversations of a political nature in public space anymore. Right? No, we're going all the way backwards to a place and time when people were not respected as having individual political power, and in multitudes of people, enough power to shift systems. To me, that like going backwards, yeah, absolutely is not the thing. But going forward, we have to recognize that this is something different. And the reality of, you know, all of the commentary about Joe Biden and supporting the genocide, the only reason humanitarian aid was getting to Gaza was because of the work that the Biden administration was doing. And now we see that turning off completely. We'll see what happens in 30 days or so.
Well, as we mentioned at the outset, there's so much. It's so much. There's too much for us, too much information for us to get our heads around in the space of a 60-minute radio broadcast. So I'm gratified to hear that people are sharing our sense of alarm, that people are beginning to mobilize, that our listeners are out there protesting and demonstrating in clever ways. And there's a big part of me that looks forward to participating in this, because demonstrations, protests in the street, they're often pilloried as ineffective and largely symbolic, and are unable to achieve anything concrete. And from a certain perspective, that's legitimate criticism. But there's another dimension that happens when people get out in the streets and they march together. And that is that they first grab attention and hold it. They provoke commentary from the other side that is often incredibly revealing. And they also make people in positions of power uneasy. We need to make people in positions of power uneasy. That means the Republican establishment, they need to be scared to come to their home districts. If this is a Democratic establishment, they need to be scared at long last into being a true opposition and progressive party. This is the power that we have. We only have it when we engage collectively. We only have it when we exercise it at scale. It's not enough to get in a spirited debate on Reddit or on Twitch or on YouTube or whatever the hell it is you happen to be digitally. You need to get out there with your friends and your neighbors and your family members, and you need to make some noise, because they will notice, and it does make a difference, but only if we reach that critical mass. So we're going to continue to advocate for this on this program going forward.
Okay. We don't have a lot of time, but we've got Sharon on the line. Sharon, good morning.
Hi. I'm not quite sure I would set up my phone, but I will try to do my best. Tell me if there's too much interference with the radio. I calling about the apathy that I agree with. So I'm 60, so part of it for me is shock. But for younger people, that my own children and that I work with, a lot of it is this idea that they don't think anything's actually going to make a difference. A lot have been so hurt. They're feeling hopeless after Bernie not winning, and they were so excited about that, and different movements, and just thinking it doesn't make a difference. So that is, and then the economic boycott, you know, just this Friday or this recently happened, people just didn't really partake of it. They just kind of were like, oh, well, whatever, you know. And so I guess I wondered if you knew of good leadership that could inspire people to think and show them a way that it could actually make a difference. My generation's all kind of looking for what will work now that so many branches of government seem to be totally corrupted. But for young people, a lot of it is they've actually never seen it be effective. Resistance. So I just wanted your thoughts on that.
Thank you very much for the call. Mm-hmm. I need to think about that for a second. Tracy, you have anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think Santiago's named some of those organizations, you know, the Working Families Party, the Democratic Socialists.
Yeah, yeah.
There are, you know, groups working right now. I think, you know, last week we talked about groups at the kind of micro neighborhood level. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As well, building solidarity there. And I'm thinking about that more and more as we discuss things like, you know, the elders in your community possibly not getting their Social Security checks. Like, how are we going to address that? How are we going to build community in a place of people not having? How do we share what we have with others if we don't have relationships with them? And so, I continue to say, like, you know, it has to be happening at multiple levels, but the just sitting back and waiting for somebody else to save it and save what's been ours for a long time, or we've recognized as ours, and that is changing at such a rapid pace, we can't wait. There is no waiting period here. It's happening right now and at a pace, right? We're being fire hosed with all of this negative information. It's there with, you know, a sense of chaos right in behind it, and also causing our cortisol levels to fill up and potentially to harm us in ways that we're not even able to recognize and to hear now. And so our ability to build solidarity across difference and rise up in a way that is impactful at not only the local level, but at the state level, pushing on our own mm-hmm. leaders to speak up. They've mm-hmm. been really quiet. I continue to ask, you know, where are the governors of Oregon, Washington, and California standing together and saying, absolutely not, we're not going along with this. We haven't heard it. And so looking towards, that level of leadership and putting pressure on them to stand up, but also standing up on our own as well.
Yeah, where is that opposition? I think we're seeing the beginning to coalesce, and we're going to do everything we can at this program to fan those flames into an inferno, because that's what we need. That is what we need at this moment. Tracy, we're coming up against the end of the show. Have you any words of wisdom for us? Hello? we seem to have lost Tracy's call. That is unfortunate. Apologies for the hiccup here at the end of the program. All right. Thank you all for participating in today's conversation. These are the conversations that need to take place elsewhere in your communities, in your individual lives. This is what we have to do. We have to pick up this torch and carry it forward with the people you live with, the people you work with, the people on your block, your extended circle of friends and a family. Everybody needs to talk about what they can do to arrest this rapid hollowing out of our society and of our government and put us on track towards a more enlightened future. This is what we need to do. Each and every day, you need to have these conversations, even when they're difficult, even they're with people who are not initially receptive to them. This is what we need to do. There are ways to do this in a civil fashion. There are ways to have these conversations with people who don't agree with you in ways that do not immediately alienate them. I encourage you to search for those ways, even though the temptation to unload on somebody is very, very strong. Believe me, I understand that. I deal with that every single day. But there are ways. Thank you again for tuning in. This has been Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor for Tracy Simmons. We'll be back at you next week.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing you now through